It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 435. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And the wiki is back up, I am glad to say. Winston fixed the database issue and got it up. The website is mtswiki.com, and there you'll find links to all of the past shows and show notes and information on the equipment and software that I use to produce the show. I have jam-packed show covering not only in the trenches stories, but following up on important questions that I've asked you to help me out with clients, and I haven't gotten back to you to let you know. I'm going to let you know what's been selected and the results of some of the feedback that I've gotten from you, which I really, really appreciate. And then we got some email. I'm not sure if we're going to get to it. We're going to do my best. What I want to talk about first is Call That Girl's Guide to Remote Support Tip of the Week. Be sure to add a remote support page to your website along with all information you want the general public to know about it. Be sure to include the reasons why remote support is great. There's no need to disconnect all the cords. No need to haul your computer to a shop. It's a faster turnaround time for the client, and it's cost effective for you and your client. That's a great tip. And you can find that and a ton more just like it in 60 fabulous pages of the ebook, Call That Girl's Guide to Computer Remote Support. It's filled with great tips and also real stories of support that you can relate to help your client expand your business, make more money. There's going to be a special link in the show notes. If you click on that, you can get a special deal on all three ebooks for an incredible price. So you have to check that out. Go to miketechshow.com, click on the link, and you'll get hooked up with some great, great ebooks that can help you with your business. A few weeks ago, I asked everybody to recommend an easy way to encrypt a 2 gigabyte USB stick that my client can put files on that stick, quickly encrypt it with like the last 4 digits of their social security number, and hand it to them. Kyle from Ohio sent me the link, and I included this in, I think, last week's show. And the link is usbsafeguard.com. They have the most incredible utility, and it's just usbsafeguard.exe. You put that on a USB stick, double-click it, and it opens up and asks you questions about encrypting the stick. Now, you make sure it's empty. You let it encrypt it, and then to lock the stick, you pick a password. It's just a little window. You put the password, so I could put like 1234 and then 1234. That's it. It's encrypted. The only thing you see is usbsafeguard.exe in the root of the USB stick. So you unlock it. When you double click it, it asks you the unlock password. You quickly type it in, and now you can see all the files, and now you can add to it. Double click it. It asks you to just enter the password and then enter it one more time to confirm. That's it. Simple, perfect, exactly what I was looking for, exactly what my client was looking for. And Kyle is getting a shirt and hat from the Mike Tech Show. Kyle, thank you very much. I want to thank everybody for sending in all your suggestions because I went through them. And that was the easiest way. Rather than put a script together that's complicated with 7-Zip or a script with TrueCrypt, it gets very complicated to set up. Great suggestions. And under normal circumstances, yes, but we're talking high volume here where every client would be getting this stick with files on it, and we want to have a different password for each person. So it's got to be very easy for someone to use it. The cost of this utility, if you're using it on a 2 gig stick or smaller, is free. It doesn't get better than that. I'll have a link in the show notes. I want to do a follow-up on my Google Apps run-in with a client where we didn't have the ownership of the DNS, and I was doing that on Black Friday with my client. It went perfectly. Went in, logged in to Network Solutions, took control of the name servers. That just took seconds. Once I did that, the only real domain information that I had to worry about was their FTP site. So I quickly made the entries for the FTP, and then I added the Google MX records so email would flow to Google Apps, entered them, and it just worked perfectly. It was flawless, no problems, not even a phone call in the beginning of this week as I converted them on Friday and then went to all the workstations. And very interesting, every workstation used Thunderbird. So I just used IMAP back to the Google Apps so they could get it. And just in case mail was coming in through the old MX records because maybe a website or, you know, somebody didn't get the update, well, I left both IMAP setups. So this way they could not only transfer mail from their old mail provider, but in case some mail slipped through and went to the old MX records, they still had access to it. So it was a perfect solution for them to access both for their email. And having Thunderbird is a snap to connect up. It's even easier than Outlook. So I was really glad that all came together. And a happy story there. A while back, as a matter of fact, it was this client that on an old Dell server, one of their drives went bad. And we had a backup of that drive. Actually, I didn't even know they were using data on that particular drive. And we had a backup, but it was fairly old. So there was a lot of new work done. And this drive crashed. It kept appearing and disappearing, and then it would go for long periods of time where you couldn't see it. I tried everything to get the data from it. I even tried Zero Assumption Recovery, which is a great utility that I love to use, and it did not work. We sent this drive to $300 drive recovery, and that URL is just 300ddr.com. And you can Google $300 drive recovery, and you'll get the link. We sent that. It was a $300 bill and then $130 for a new drive to copy 300 gigs of data. Once they got that drive back with 100% file recovery, no loss. And I didn't get a chance to really follow up on that. So I have actual experience now of using $300 drive recovery. The process is so easy where you fill out a form. Once you fill out the form, you include the paperwork. They'll even email you back based on the information that you've provided them. They're going to give you a percentage of what they think they can recover. And it seems like this particular model drive fails quite frequently, and they are very familiar with it. They said they've had like 90% success rate of 30 of these drives and that they felt strongly that they were going to get the data back based on what I told them and what was happening. Well, they got 100% of the data back. And that was just a great story. And so a big thumbs up to $300 Drive Recovery. And they were able to, like I said, get over 300 gigs of data back for $430 because it's the price of the new drive that they put the data. Now, you can send your own drive if you want. An external drive. So you can send the one that's bad and then an external drive that they can put it in. So, you know, control costs a little bit, or you just buy the drive for them and they're not gouging. It's just straightforward. All the prices, they're very clear of exactly what it's going to cost. And I believe that there's no charge if they can't get the data back. Check that out. If you have clients that are yourself and you run into a problem where you've done everything you can, well, try it there before you try some of the more expensive places that we've often heard about, where the cost could be quadruple that and you may not get your data. Interesting story. I have a client where their drive failed, and this is the second Dell system that a drive failed, and they're from the same batch, and I'm wondering that there was a bad batch of drives from 2 years ago that now the second Dell in a week. The drive crashed. And Dell came out and put a new drive in and set Windows 7 Professional up. But then I had to remote in and do all the software installs. And I got everything installed. But I added something because this is also a company where they, I was going to say accidentally, but they go looking for things and download bad software. They're looking to maybe read a particular file format or something strange that they get. They go searching and they download bad software, software that infects their systems. This is a client that I've put Malwarebytes Pro, which, by the way, I'm an affiliate for Malwarebytes Pro, and there's a link on the left-hand side of my website. I love that software. I recommend it all the time. It's one of the only malware programs that I say go buy the pro version because it actively runs and it will protect the system. Well, guess what I forgot to do? In the course of resetting up this client, I downloaded Malwarebytes, but I did it through Ninite, so it's not active, it's not running, and I didn't activate by re-putting in the serial number so this way it would run and act like the pro version and be proactive. I did not do that. So shame on me for not doing that. But I did add Web of Trust. And I explained to the user, when you search, if you see green at the end of the URL, little green light, that's good. You can click on it. You see a red light, that's bad. Stop. I get them all set up. I get a call later that afternoon. And he says, Mike, I did a bad thing. I said, no, what did you do? Well, you know, you showed me that Web of Trust and you said, don't go there with the red. I don't know why, but I went there. Now, let's pause for a second. Why would an intelligent person, when I say red, stop, don't go, don't do it, why would you continue and click on it and go and do it? He infected his system again. I said, don't worry about it. I said, you know what, just log off and I'll log in remotely. It wasn't terrible. I was able to get in. I activated Malwarebytes. I ran Malwarebytes. It found 21 infected objects, rebooted, system clean. I cleaned up Internet Explorer, did a reset. I made sure everything was running and I realized that it already broke the firewall. It broke Windows updates. So what do we do when we see that? You stop what you're doing and you immediately get tweaking.com's all-in-one repair tool. I ran that. Everything's fixed. A couple hours, it's all done and it's all good. I wanted to share that story that you can do everything humanly possible. If your client doesn't listen, you know what? That's what I get paid for. And if they want to continue to do that and continue to pay me to fix it, I'll continue to help them. You can do everything you can and warn them, but if they don't listen, there's nothing you can do. And there's no need to get upset. I was, you know, why get upset? Nice guy, client. They pay their bill quickly. I just said, don't worry about it. I'll fix it. Go in, you fix it. And you just keep doing it. So that leads to a support story from last night that I think you're going to find amusing. client calls me in a panic. My Outlook is no longer working. I'm clicking on emails. Nothing's coming up. I'm like, uh-oh. His local PST file might be corrupt. I said, how about if I remote in? He was real busy, and he said, look, let's not worry about it right now. How about at the end of the day, when I get back from, when he gets back from his appointments, I get back from my appointments, we'll connect up, and I'll remote in, and let's see what I can do. We connect up about 8:30 p.m. Eastern time last night. I remote in. The first thing I do, I close Outlook. I make sure it's not running in the task list and in the processes. And I immediately go to the location of the PST and I make a copy. It's a 1.7 gig size PST. I quickly copy it to a backup folder. I now have a safety copy of the PST. Whatever we do to it, we'll fix it up. Now I open Outlook and he's right. I'm double clicking and I can't see it opening up. I'm like, boy, this is kind of weird. The first thing you do is the scan PST, and that's in the program files. If it's a 64-bit system, 86, Office, depending on the version, this was Office 14, and there's a scan PST. You click on that, and it will ask you where the PST file is, and it will do a complete repair. It'll even ask you, do you want to back it up? And I said, nah, because I just backed it up. So it did a repair, says it was successful, found a couple errors, repaired them. I was like, oh, cool. Let's open up Outlook. No joy. When in doubt, create a new profile. I created a new profile. And that was, it was fairly easy. He didn't have any complicated profile. You know, he's getting his mail, you know, just standard mail, actually from liveoffice.com. I put in all the info, recreate the profile, same thing. And then it dawned on me. It had been a long time since I had been at his house. And I said, do you have your second monitor connected? He says, yes. As a matter of fact, it's not on. I said, could you turn on your second monitor? Turns on his second monitor, and that's where it's popping up. There was no issue at all. He is a dual monitor setup. He never turned on the little second monitor. Somehow, accidentally, the opening of an email was opening up on the monitor that was off. You know, you can't make this stuff up. I couldn't believe it. This is after almost an hour. I'm working on this, and then he feels pretty small at this point because he had no problem at all to begin with. Moral of this story: look for the basics. It's interesting as a challenge when you're working remotely. A simple question: how many monitors do you have? It would have been obvious if I was at his house and I was sitting in front of it. I'd be like, oh, what's, you know, I would turn that on. It would have been instantaneous. But being remote, I don't realize that there's a second monitor. It's been months and months and months since I've been over his house. A comment in the chat: my computer doesn't turn on, and the first question you got to ask, is it plugged in? Is it plugged in to a source that the power is working? Is the surge strip turned on? You got to get back to these basic questions when you're troubleshooting, and it's even more important when you're doing this remotely. So you have that extra layer of difficulty where you visually can't see everything. And you got to guide that person at the other end and take the time. And that's why it's so important to hear these tips when you're embarking on remote support. And that's why I like Lisa's ebook on the guide to remote support. They're the kind of stories and the kind of things that's going to get you thinking. And you're going to be like, wow, I never thought of that or thought of asking that. That can help when you are doing remote support. I run into this, and I live this, and it sounds simple, and a lot of you are probably smiling or laughing at this, but in reality, when you're in this situation now, you're going to think of these questions, and you're going to think of these scenarios, and that's what I want to stimulate here. So it could be months from now, when you're in this situation, hopefully this will pop into your brain, and you'll be like, ah, wait, how many monitors do you got? Are they all on, you know? And that can be a big help. I want to follow up with the request I made a while back on recommendations for internet radio for a small restaurant. And the consensus seemed to be the Grace Digital Wireless Hi-Fi Internet Radio Tuner featuring Pandora and NPR and also Sirius. It's under $200. That's what they're buying. Well, I bought the slightly less expensive because I wanted something, and I got the Grace Digital Wi-Fi, the smaller one, and this one, it's $141, well worth it. I love my Pandora and Sirius XM radio, and since my iHome radio no longer can charge my iPhone 5, this smaller radio, not only is it internet radio based on Wi-Fi, but it has a USB port, and I have an extra cable so I can charge my iPhone 5 while I'm sleeping or anytime I'm up in the bedroom. The connection and getting this set up was a piece of cake. Once you get it onto your wireless network, which is tricky in the sense that you get a little color display and you get a keyboard and you got to move the dial to just pick the password for the proper SID for your Wi-Fi network. So once it sees all the Wi-Fi networks, you pick that, then you go in and enter the password by turning the dial across the visual keyboard. And once you get that and you're connected, you go to an option to say you want to register your computer for online, and it gives you a number. You go to Grace's website, you enter that number, and it phones home and connects you and kind of registers your device. Now you can just use the website to enter your account information for your internet-based Sirius XM radio, my Pandora information. It has iHeartRadio. The sound quality is beautiful. It works flawlessly, and it's not that expensive. There's two reasons I'm bringing it up. One, I like it, but now for the holidays, and I'm going to have a link to this from Amazon, what a great gift for the geek in your life who maybe needs to charge things with that USB port, and somebody who has the ability that they have the Wi-Fi. And a great question in the chat from Jerry, how far away is it from you? Well, it's at the furthest end of the house. I have my Wi-Fi here in my office, and then we're talking two flights up and back. So I have a pretty good connection from my wireless end, and it is flawless, no problems. And it has a remote control, so I could quickly move to what I want. It also has internet radio, so we have a local station here it's called WIP. They used to be WYSP, and it's our FM sports, local sports talk, and I have that preset for the internet radio version for that channel, and then I have my favorite Pandora setups, and then, of course, my favorite Sirius XM channels, my Howard Stern and then the Bridge or Coffee House or, of course, Pearl Jam Channel 22. I get all that and I just love it. Of course, someone mentioned the Sinatra, Channel 71. So I know these things by heart. Love my music. Got to have it. I give that a thumbs up. And it was great to play with that Grace product because now I felt strongly about recommending its bigger brother, where it has more capability for speakers, but it's basically the same operation, and it just works so well. I'm very, very happy. I think that's a great gift idea if you have someone that you know really likes and subscribes to those things, and they have a place where they have to carry their laptop there, and now they could put a fixed radio device, and it's a great clock radio too. I just wanted to talk about that. I have a Firefox tip. The reason I want to talk about this, I love my Firefox, as you know, And I also love my Phillies. So you say, well, what does that have to do with the Philadelphia Phillies? Well, MLB.com, since I'm an MLB subscriber, sent me a link to where I could get themes for my favorite browser. So for Firefox, I was able to download a Philadelphia Phillies theme. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. Let me check this out. It was so horrible. It just, not only does it take over the Firefox so bad, the colors, I didn't like the color selection. You know, the Phillies are red and everything, but they just really went overboard and overboard with the specific MLB links and everything. They just, it was a mess. I don't want this. Let's go back to the default theme. And I went back to the default theme, except for this little annoying web search add-in that even when I disable, if you right-click and say new tab, it would come up with this My Search website. And I couldn't get rid of it. And I'm like, where is it coming in? Well, after some research, you got to go in to the detailed config of Firefox. So at a blank screen prompt, you type the word about, then colon config. You get a warning that says, this might void your warranty. And you just keep going and say, hey, I'll be careful, I promise. Now you got a search bar and hundreds of different settings that you can change for Firefox. Type in the letters URL, hit enter, and the first thing that's highlighted is on the left-hand side, it's browser, new tab, URL. And if you go over to the value, there is where the search URL is entered. The only way you can remove it is to go through this process, right-click on it, and say modify or reset. Now, if you reset, it will go back to a blank page. So the next time you right-click and you say new tab, you're just going to get a blank page, and you're going to get your favorites of the last sites that you've went to. I like Google to be my default page. So I modified it, and when you modify it, you just put the full URL in the string box that comes up. And I put http://google.com. That's it. When I right-clicked and said new, I now get Google. So it was annoying, and it took me about a half hour to search through to get to that advanced setting in Firefox. But once I found it, I was very, very happy. And if you're ever stuck with something that's buried deep within Firefox like that, go to that config. Let's get to a couple emails. This is from Michael. This is another option to share encrypted files. And he says, Mike, when you were looking for an encryption option for sharing files, I thought about EFS. It's already built into Windows. I included a link to a Microsoft article. I think this is easier since it's already built into Windows. Michael, thank you. And as before, I discussed with the one I like. I will have this link in the show notes for everybody to check it out. Thanks a lot. This is from Kate, and this is about OpenDNS IP version 6 issues. Mike, I know you're a fan of OpenDNS, but thrash it occasionally. Here's something that might help next time you have to troubleshoot. Susan Bradley's excellent Patch Watch portion of the Windows Secrets newsletter has it. OpenDNS and Microsoft duke it out over IP version 6. A Microsoft update that fixes issues with the Windows implementation of IPv6 is conflicting with OpenDNS implementation of the protocol. I have a couple of my own issues with knowledge base article, and I'll link it. It's a 2750841. First and foremost, it's a non-security update included with the Patch Tuesday security updates. As regular Patch Watch readers know, that alone puts an immediate hold on the patch. Furthermore, the update's conflict with OpenDNS means you might get an annoying pop-up, prompting you for additional sign-in information. It's similar to the authentication alert you get when accessing a hotel's wireless network. As noted in the OpenDNS forums, the pop-up appears because the system can't resolve, and it's at ipv6.msftncsi.com/ncsi.txt or any of the other checks that Microsoft Network Connectivity Status Indicator uses to detect a live internet connection. That in turn redirects your browser to the OpenDNS website unavailable page. A superuser blog post gives an excellent discussion on why you might get an additional authentication prompt. Thank you, Kate, for passing this on. Interesting about applying non-security related patches. It's why I don't like for myself to auto-apply and download the patches. I say download, but I want to intervene on which ones to install. I don't want that happening automatically on my system. Do as I say, not as I do, because for clients, I want that to be automatic. I don't want them to choose. I want them to be constantly updated. So we're torn between all those updates being pushed automatically, and here you go. You get one that can conflict with a service or something that you're using. The biggest problem I had way back was patches that would like break a printer driver for HP and break all the network printing. I used to hate that. That would happen regularly years ago. So, Kate, thanks for sharing that information. Last email. This is from Teresa. Hi, Mike. Heard your response to the email you received about using Evernote to hold encrypted files, show 434. Not sure if this will help with the current problem you are having. Remember, I didn't think it would, but I just thought, hey, it's a cool idea. But thought I'd throw it out there. The customer could set up a single premium Evernote account, then create separate folders for each customer and only share out the folder for that customer to the USB stick. Not practical with hundreds and hundreds of customers. You don't want to have all that on the same USB stick. If they also use a different password to encrypt each user's data, that may take care of their problem in this regard. Also, keep your eyes open for Evernote Business, which is coming in December. It may be too late for what you want to fix for this particular customer, but it looks very promising. They say they will offer the admin some user management tools. Not sure what it will entail, but I am keeping my eye on it as a possible solution to some work-related issues. Anyway, thought I'd pass on the link, and it's evernote.com/business. Great show as always, Teresa. Thank you very much, and definitely for that heads up on Evernote Business. I'm going to look into that, see what features they're offering. You know, I am an Evernote addict. I love Evernote. To me, it's the only true note-taking tool out there. I mean, there's a lot of good ones I know, but you know how I use and promote and just love Evernote because it just syncs with everything. As we start to wrap up here, you got the holidays, Black Friday just passed. I want to thank everybody first for continuing to use my Amazon link. Keep using it for your holiday shopping. Pass it on. Share it to friends, family, relatives, anybody that you know or come in contact with. It's amazon.micnation.net. And also you can get to it by just going to my website and clicking on the link on the left-hand side. Your price is the same. A small percentage will come back as a commission back to support the Mike Tech Show, and I really appreciate it. And with that, don't forget Fab's Auto Backup for Tech. The link will be in the show notes. And also my Malwarebytes icon on the left-hand side of the website. I love Malwarebytes Pro. It really works when you do activate it. So remember, you got to activate it. I know that would have protected my client had I activated it. It absolutely would have protected him because it's proactive and it's constantly watching while you're surfing and you're going on to websites. And it would have prevented him from going there. A big lesson learned on my part. I want to thank everybody for supporting the show, downloading the show, subscribing to it, spread the word. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to talking with you again next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.